Well, it's a real pleasure to have Catherine Peters with Comforts of Home Care participate in this edition of the podcast. And over the last little while, we've tried to have speakers on that have helped us focus on the whole issue of transitions and change. And what we try to do is source information to help people be resilient through those periods of change. Now, sometimes changes take place because they're intentional. We are planning for them. We have goals. We have things we want to do. And that's one kind of change. But other changes come into our life that are unanticipated, that surprise us, sometimes blindside us. And the work that Catherine does is almost a combination of both those kinds of changes. She works with supporting seniors to maintain their long-term independence in their own homes. And we all know we're going to get older, but sometimes that change confronts both individuals and families very quickly and sometimes by surprise. And so I know that she's very passionate about the work that she does, and we're excited to have her on the call today. So again, thanks, Catherine, so much for taking time to join us today.
It's my pleasure to join you, Sean.
So I guess the first question I have for you is if you can just share a little bit about your organization's mission, which I kind of alluded to a little bit, but I know you can expand on it much better than I can, and sort of what services do you provide?
Well, Sean, our mission is to help seniors remain in their homes for as long as possible, and we do that by providing especially caring companions to do the things for the seniors that they can't do for themselves anymore. Mm. The things that they might do would be homemaking, you know, housekeeping. We do provide transportation for errands and doctor's appointments, shopping, and they also provide personal care and meal planning and preparation. So by providing these services for our seniors, we help the senior actually remain independent. It's a little bit ironic that the senior can, mm-hmm. by accepting help, they can then remain independent, and at the same time, that gives families peace of mind.
Well, now, just as an aside, it seems like almost every day in the news there's reports on, you know, the graying of the population globally and the aging of the population here in Canada and the issues that both pension plans and the healthcare systems will have to deal with. Have you seen a significant rise in the work that you've been doing and families that have been referred to over the last few years?
Well, in the last few years, I started my business about 7 years ago.
Okay.
And so it was a little, you know, it's a little bit of a tough go at first, especially with, you know, learning where to get the word out that people would refer to us, because although there's a great pressure on the system, it doesn't mean that the government system is now going to refer to a private company.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, there's been an increased demand, and as the word has gotten out there, we've just gotten busier and busier. There's no doubt about it that the population is aging. And as time moves forward, of course, there's just going to be more and more of a demand for these kind of services.
Yeah. It was interesting. I wasn't sure. I think it was last year that the oldest of the baby boomers, I may not be exactly right on this, turned 65. So you've got this baby boomer demographic that's is just huge in North America. And so there's obviously going to be a huge need for your kind of services. Now, most business owners, you know, that's a very general comment, but I think it's very true. There's usually something that's inspired them, you know, that drives a passion behind their business and why they initiated it in the first place. What inspired you to start the business, to get it going? Because like you said, it's a hard go initially to start a new business, to get the word out, to get it going. So what was the background for you that got you on this track?
You know what, Sean? I've always had a passion to make a difference in other people's lives. And that's what motivated me to take my social work degree. Now, before that, I worked for 19 years as a hairdresser out of my home.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
Yeah. I love running my own business. I love business, but I also love helping people. So when I came across this idea for starting a private home care company, it seemed to marry the two passions that I had very well. And so what happened was I got a job at a major Winnipeg hospital.
Okay.
And I worked there for about a year and a half. And what I saw was a lot of gaps in the system, you know, and my job as a social worker was to help people get discharged in a safe way.
Okay.
And sometimes there was gaps and they weren't able to necessarily go home, even though they were medically stable, because they didn't have the supports at home, they weren't able to go home. Now, there is government home care, and that can take a while to set up. Sometimes people would just remain in the hospital longer just because the services aren't there for them to go home to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the beauty of this business is we're able to put that help in place very quickly. But I want to tell you what I did at the hospital. Was one of my jobs was to bring our patients the papers for going to a personal care home.
Okay.
And this is the part that was really emotionally difficult for me, because what I saw was, you know, either the patient would fight me on it and get very angry, or else they would sign the papers with this sad, quiet resign. And it was that point where I could tell for them this was the beginning of the end. And it was most difficult for me. It was a sad thing. And so when I came across the idea of starting Comforts of Home Care, I was really excited. And I thought, you know, this is going to be something that is going to create solutions for people.
No, exactly. And it's sort of relevant. I mean, although it's a different set of circumstances, it's interesting in the news locally. And I know that the folks in the hospitals do their very best. I mean, they're stressed in terms of resources and very, very busy. But we've had examples of people being discharged, and it just seemed like there really wasn't a system in place to make sure that they were shepherded from the hospital to home, to make sure they're in the home and that their needs were looked after. And some, you know, bad situations were caused as a result of that. Now, those are extreme examples, but it just demonstrates, underscores the importance of that process to support people post those experiences in the hospital.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, you think about those discussions you had with those folks in that moment when probably there wasn't a lot of pre-discussion about what happens with them, or the kids talking about what happens with mom and dad. And in that moment, when they haven't really had a chance to think about it, they're being asked to make some decisions that are just huge decisions at that moment. So I can see how it'd be very emotionally charged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at your business, or look specifically at the work that you do, what are the biggest challenges that you think are facing seniors when it comes to long-term care or staying in their home? Are there kind of immediate things that come to mind for you as you've worked with seniors in this transition or trying to help them stay in their homes for longer periods of time?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is, like we had talked about earlier, is that the population is aging. And so there's just an increased burden on the system in caring for the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening is, you know, even though the government says that they're not cutting back home care services, there's definitely a paring of what's available, and the generosity has stopped. You know, there's no more vacuuming per se, or, you know, things that 8 years ago the government was doing, they're just not doing it anymore. And it's because of the pressure and the aging population, and we all know that the wait lists for beds in personal care homes are getting longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can take up to a year to get into a personal care home of your choosing. And so most seniors that I've met just want to stay in their homes, and they don't want to move. And there's a reluctance to receive help, but they know that they need help. And, you know, the government services really can only go so far. But the thing about our services is we can literally fill in the gaps for services that the government is unable to provide, and that way we can keep them in their homes much longer, and even right to the end if that's what they want. They really literally won't have to move to a personal care home.
Wasn't that something? It's interesting. Now, again, I don't know the numbers. You probably know them much better than I do, but it seems to me that from even a cost standpoint, if both families, but even governments, were looking for ways of cost-effectively making sure that the needs of the the elderly and the aging are looked after effectively, being at home longer and having supports in the home just seems to be, in my mind, it seems to be a more cost-effective route. Is that the case? Am I dreaming when I think about that, or is that in fact true?
I mean, there's different ways of looking at it. Of course, you know, it depends. 24-hour care, personal care, can be very expensive.
Okay.
For sure. Now, if you're looking, I've done the analysis sort of on moving to an assisted living facility.
Okay.
You know, an assisted living facility can cost you between, you know, $2,000 and $3,000 a month, and even more.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, you know, you don't have your mortgage or your, you know, most mortgages by the time you're 85, they're paid down already. But, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have your house to look after. That's true. And you do have meals provided.
Mm-hmm.
But for that same, you know, that same $3,000 a month, you can get 3 to 4, you know, to 5 hours of care, personalized care in your home every single day, which means you could actually stay in your home and you could have somebody come in and cook those meals for you and help you with any, you know, personal items that you need. And for the same cost, but for a lot of people, they would be much happier staying in their home. They're not isolated. They've got a friend who comes in, because literally the services that we provide are by caregivers who actually care. They're not just coming in and cleaning and, you know, treating the people roughly at all. I mean, it's all about the connection and the building of relationship. And that's really what the senior ends up looking forward to the most, is that relationship that they've built with their caregiver.
Which is a huge part of resiliency and health, right? Having those relationships and connections. So when you look at your service as an example, there really is continuity in care. So when someone's placed or put into a home for that kind of senior needing those kinds of assistance, there is that continuity. There's not a change of person one time. It's one person one week. There's a different person. You really try to make sure there's continuity.
We do really strive for that. There's circumstances, of course, that are beyond our control. But
sure.
That is our aim, is to get a caregiver who matches that client. So whatever the needs of the client are, and make sure that they match.
Hmm.
You know, culturally, our caregivers, they all speak really good English. That's one of the qualifications. You know, they all drive cars, so they're of a certain caliber of a person. They're not just coming in and unable to relate to our clients. And if the client needs a good cook because they can't cook anymore and, you know, diet is something that's critical, then we make sure that we give them someone who can cook.
Yeah. Well, it just seems to me, if you can emotionally help a person stay in their home longer, it's where they raise their kids and have so many families and memories, and they have, you know, the environment they're in, the neighborhood, it just seems to be a better option in my mind. And, you know, obviously there's extenuating circumstances where it doesn't work for people, but I can see where there'd be a lot of benefits. Now, let's say that you have a family where they recognize that there's a need for supports for mom and dad or mom, and they wanted to sort of explore your services. What does the experience look like? What typically happens for families or individuals that approach you to look at your services?
Well, Sean, it's pretty simple, really. Usually the child of the adult parent, so the adult needing help, usually the adult child,
mm-hmm.
will give us a call, and they ask whatever questions they want to ask. They get all kinds of information, and we also, in return, get information from them about their parent, and then one of our client care coordinators goes out to meet the parent.
Okay.
And also the family, you know, usually we try to have a decision maker there in order to just keep everybody accountable. We don't like to meet seniors on their, like, by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then care can be set up very quickly easily within 48 hours, but sometimes quicker if it's necessary.
Okay. So it can be a very quick process. If an issue comes up and they need supports, it can be a, like you said, within 48 hours, it can be care arranged.
It can happen within 3 hours, right? I
Wow.
mean,
Wow.
in tight circumstances,
Okay.
if that's what people need, we have done it. It's not the best case scenario because the more time we take to set that up, the better
Sure.
success rate we'll have as far as, being able to get the right person, and that person can end up, staying for years with the same senior person. So.
Well, maybe my next question kind of ties into what we just talked about, and that's really kind of advice for families. I know that often, and we've experienced this as a family, and I know that I've had clients over the years experience the same thing, that sometimes decisions have to be made very, very quickly, and families end up being surprised because of some deterioration in their parents' health or independence in terms of being able to look after themselves. So that we can try to minimize those kinds of surprises, do you have any advice for how families can be a little more proactive in their planning for the care of aging family members? Is there a little bit of advice that you can give based on your experience for families, knowing that
Sure.
this could be an issue, you just don't know when, maybe not for sure, but it could be.
Absolutely. About this is a surprising number. About 33% of all Manitobans are family caregivers.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's grown from 25% just not too long ago. And the transition of caring for someone who once cared for you can be quite difficult, right? There's a role reversal, and it really is important to get all the information and help that you can.
Yeah.
And so, if you are a caregiver or you anticipate being one, it's really important to know what your options are and educate yourself on how to get through this part of the journey. And that's what we hear over and over again is people just don't have enough information when it is needed, and then they often have to end up learning the hard way. So, it can be very confusing and daunting and bureaucratic to find the right help in the system. We have a lot of people, many people come to me and say, oh, they wish they would have heard of us sooner so that their parent could have stayed home longer. But so we encourage people to, find out what their resources are. We do have a resource on our website for family caregivers. And that is our Family Learning Center. And so,
And just for people listening to this podcast, we'll be sure to put in the show notes links to that information so that people can go to that, Catherine, so they can look at it directly.
sure. Yeah. And so we've got online courses that are
Okay.
free. There's over 50 different segments of the courses that you can take.
Okay.
And many of them relate to people with dementia and how to care for someone with dementia, because what really when you start caring, when someone you love starts acting differently, it's really difficult to understand. And when you have information and to say, oh, this is normal in this circumstance, then it becomes easier to deal with, and then you have more tools and you're able to deal with it better.
We had run an event. This is going back at least a year ago. We had a person from the Alzheimer's Society of Manitoba talk, and it was very enlightening. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go on behind the scenes that people get surprised at. And one of the things that she talked about, and I alluded to it before, was is that mom and dad are just very, very concerned about losing their independence. And sometimes what happens is that they do a very good job of masking for one another the issues that they're struggling with, and they do such a good job that it's not until the wheels start falling off the bus that family members understand there's an issue. They've just really tried to mask it and hide it until they get to the point where they can't hide it anymore. And she alluded to the fact that if at all possible, the whole notion of family discussions and strategies and ways of just, everyone knows that there's maybe an elephant in the room, but nobody wants to talk about the difficult subjects. But there are people that can really facilitate those conversations and help families kind of confront some issues. So I thought it was very interesting. And those outreach opportunities just, are very informative. Now, I'm going to ask you another question. I'm not sure whether you want to tackle this one or not, but I did want to get your perspective, or maybe you want to take a pass on it. But again, you've got a depth and breadth of experience in this area. Are there any, you know, if you had a wand and you get any wish you wanted in terms of tax policy or government initiatives, what would you like to see take place to support senior population and the needs that are taking place out there?
Well, first of all, I need to say that Manitoba does have the most generous home care program across Canada.
Okay.
They offer, I believe it's up to 56 hours a week of care, which compared to Ontario at 14 is
a huge difference.
Very generous.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like government systems sometimes, I mean, it could be run differently, which would be more effective. It could be more effective, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the problem is that they're limited by regulations. And comforts of home care, we're not limited by regulations. And all of our clients' services are client-driven.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that what the client wants, the client gets. And that, I mean, that's so different from the government system. Now, in answer to your question, what I have come across is just a great big divide between for-profit and not-for-profit services.
Okay.
And honestly, I think the population would be better off if the government would create an initiative or an environment where these two different agencies could actually work together, where,
okay,
you know, where we would be referring to the not-for-profit for, you know, like, you know, the public services for people, and the public services could also freely let people know what's available to them as far as resources for them, and even if it means that they would have to now pay for the service.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, then the population would be, you know, truly able to have at their fingertips all the information that they would need in order to make the decisions that they need to make in the transition that they're going through. Because like you said, it's just not easy. There's so many surprises along the way.
Yeah, so just good information. It's kind of funny, completely different area, but my kids play hockey. And every year there's this raffling out and trying to get ice time for practices and things. And early in the year, everyone's scrambling to get ice time. And through the year, sometimes the ice time that gets booked isn't needed. And the city system is not very good at reallocating that ice time. So you go to the rinks and it's not being used. It's been booked by someone, but no one's using it. So over the years, there's been kind of this informal process through emails and websites to try to get this ice time reallocated. But it doesn't always work as well as it should. And that's an example. Having good information available, getting the system to talk, different aspects of the system to talk to one another, with everyone having the same outcome, right? To make sure these people are looked after. And, you know, I think anytime you can do that and marshal resources more effectively, it's just a great win for everyone. You know, there's different programs and services, profit, nonprofit. What sets your company apart? So if you look at what you do and what you think is unique about what your company does, what would that be?
Well, I believe out of, you know, the companies that do what we do, I mean, I'm not going to compare myself to the government agencies just because they're so limited by the regulations. You know, they mm-hmm. have a list. They can only check off the things that they're going to do that day and walk away.
Yeah.
And I could tell stories, but I'm not going to go there. But, you know, even just as simple as, you know, turning on the pot of coffee, they can't do that even if the client sits there and says, could you please make me a cup of coffee, right? It's not on their list. They can't do it. So
wow.
Just a small thing, but then there's other examples. But really what sets our company apart from the other companies is the caregivers that we hire and the quality of the people that we hire. I have a full-time HR manager, and that's all she does, is make sure that we have really great staff and then taking care of that staff. And our screening process is very stringent. They have to get their criminal record check, of course, and their child abuse registry, the vulnerable persons check vulnerable person sector has to be checked as clear.
Okay.
They have a one-hour personality test that they need to take. It's online, and it screens out people who aren't serious about applying for us, and then they go through the interview, and there's reference checks, and even our orientation day, we're still screening these people. So if they present as one way in the interview, but then in a group they present in a different way, we just don't go ahead and hire them. We're constantly looking for people who are trustworthy, who are caring, and who are able to build a relationship with their clients. So as I had said before, they all speak very good English, and they can relate to our clients' culture. They're not, they're not someone who can barely speak English and really doesn't have a clue about Canadian culture, right?
Yeah, it's critical. And it's, you're not manufacturing widgets. You're not a technology firm. It's all about the relationships. And so doing that well is just a critical component.
And they all drive, and they all have their own vehicle. And they're also, in order to go through our screening process, they also have to be computer literate. So again, not just having those skills does set them apart from people who don't have those skills.
Oh, okay. Well, this has been very, very helpful. And I guess I wanted to end our conversation by asking you to maybe provide us with some tips or ideas. So here's a question. What would you say the top three ideas or strategies could be for people who want to stay independent in their homes for as long as possible? Do you have any key strategies that come to mind for you?
Well, I'm going to use my mom as an example. She's 84 years old. She's still living in her own condo, and she walks to church, and she is very active, and she really takes pride in eating well. And so, I'm going to say the top two things would be, eat well and stay active, because you're the only one who's going to be in charge of your own health at the end of the day.
Yeah.
My mom, I don't know if you know this, Sean, but she was a victim of a brutal home invasion, and she was beaten to the point where she was unconscious for 4 days.
Oh.
And this happened when she was 77 years old, so not that long ago. And I would say she has recovered absolutely remarkably, and it's because she takes care of herself. She was the only thing that she's lost permanently is quite a bit of her hearing, which she can wear hearing aids, but when you're it was pretty brutal that they struck her about the head quite a bit. So she lost her sense of smell as well, which you can't get back. But
no.
I mean, everything else, she's cooking, and she plays accordion for groups. And
oh, wow. We need to have your mom on as a guest of this podcast.
I
was a little bit familiar with it, because when we had first talked, you had forwarded some information, and when I had read that, it makes your heart stop. I mean, I can't imagine what she and really you and your family had gone through. So that just speaks volumes about your mom's resiliency, or just her spirit, that she was able to get through that and recover wonderfully, it sounds like. So it's quite a story.
So what we as a family did at that time, because she was living in her own home, we were looking for a place where not only she could be safe, but also where she could maintain her independence longer. So at that time, she was young enough so that she was still able to move and settle in her new place. We didn't wait until, this was a crisis enough, absolutely.
Yeah,
and
it
did get the ball rolling, but then she was able to recover. And when she was recovered sufficiently, then we moved her to a condo, which, she holds against us forever, because, my kids made me move.
Yeah.
But, she was young enough, and now she's been able to build relationships in the condo with people who were there, people her own age.
Yeah.
And also, she's 5 minutes away from the church that she goes to by walking. She walks there. And so she's really well connected, and she's in a lower maintenance place than her home. So if she ever needed help, more help, than she's getting right now, because we do. She does accept a caregiver to come in and do some cleaning just once a month, so that she can spend more time cooking and sewing, because that's what she really loves to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if she needed more help, we would just put more help in her in the home where she is, and she would never have to move. She can always stay there for the rest of her life. So.
Exactly. And you can just customize it over time to her needs as they change.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I just want to say thank you for taking the time to join us. There's some great information. It's a huge need. I mean, you think of some of the major trends that as a society we have to face, get our heads wrapped around, and obviously look for services to assist us. It's in the care for seniors and the notion of trying to let them stay in their homes to live independently for as long as possible just seems to be a win for not just the seniors, but for everyone, governments and families. So thanks again so much for joining us today.
Yes, and thanks for listening, Sean.
Well, that concludes my conversation with Catherine Peters. It's my hope that you found the information helpful. You know, during our discussion, Catherine mentioned that her organization had put together some free online resources that could be of great assistance to families searching for or looking for ideas in the whole area of elder care. So I'd encourage you to go below the video. You'll see in the show notes section some links to that information that Catherine mentioned. As well, don't hesitate to poke around our website for more helpful resources. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact us at info@takechargeofchange.com.